You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Now that's how I like to start a Monday. What's going on, everybody? Welcome into First Take. Stephen A. living his best life. Get it? Okay. No music, but you're still feeling it. We brought in a former Cowboy, Super Bowl champ, Keyshawn Johnson here with us joining the party, and of course, the one and only Max Kellerman. Fellas, good morning. We got a lot of sports. We got a lot of football. It's a good day. What's up, Stephen A?
Before we start, I just want to say to all of y'all, how do? How do? How you doing? I hope everybody, every one of y'all had an absolutely positively wonderful weekend. I know it was a beautiful weekend for me. I just hope it was the same for all of you out there, especially you Cowboys fans.
The more things change, the more they stay the same.
All right, y'all, let's get right into it. Stephen A., I'll start with you and your Cowboys.
Yeah.
Was Dallas robbed?
Absolutely, positively not, I must say. Listen, do I think that the play should have been called? Absolutely not. I do not believe that should have been called. I mean, for letter of the law, rule, I mean, right there. I mean, clearly, Michael Gallup had his arm extended. And according to NFL officials, that is a call you should make all day, every day. No argument there. But in the end, when you look at how pedestrian the Dallas Cowboys offense was, what is there to say? 3 points in the second half? You got Michael Gallup. You got the $100 million receiver in Amari Cooper. I know Blake Jarwin got hurt and all of that other stuff. But the bottom line is this. When you look at what the Cowboys have in terms of their arsenal, Ezekiel Elliott, Dak Prescott, etc., there is absolutely positively no excuse why you were limited to 3 points in the second half. You're Mike McCarthy. You should have kicked that field goal to tie the game early instead of going for it on fourth and one and throwing a two-yard pass ultimately got stopped. I mean, you just got 2 yards for crying out loud. That wasn't going to get it done. Kick the field goal, tie the damn score, and put yourself in a position to win the damn game down the line. You should have done that. You got away with an interference when Jared Goff got knocked upside his head by Alden Smith, who, by the way, balled. And if he stays healthy, this dude is going to be comeback player of the year because look at the kind of impact that he had. But in the end, this offense was relatively predictable. It was relatively pedestrian. You still got the same offensive coordinator, Kellen Moore. You had the number one offense last year. But the bottom line is, as things change, they remain the same. It was supposed to be a difference with Mike McCarthy. It wasn't. It was the same old, same old. And then he goes for the numbers game and let analytics rule the day. That's his fault. I understand the one play shouldn't have been called. But letter of the law, it was offensive pass interference, bottom line. And in the end, that wasn't what lost the game for them. What lost the game for the Dallas Cowboys were the fact that they were too damn predictable. They were too damn conservative. And Mike McCarthy, to me, this is a bad day because that's why you lost the job as the head coach in Green Bay, because you were considered a bit archaic and relatively conventional with an elite quarterback like Aaron Rodgers at your disposal. So if you were accused of being those things back then in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers as your quarterback, now that you have Dak Prescott, we shouldn't have expected you to be any different. You weren't, and as a result, that's why you lost this football game. Plain and simple to me.
Well, we agree that they weren't robbed, but we disagree about everything else because you're changing robbed. We're really talking about that offensive pass interference play. Now, first, let me say this. The Cowboys weren't robbed, and I think going for it on fourth was a good idea. I think more coaches should not be scared to lose. They should be trying to win. And that was the right thing. Be aggressive. It just didn't work out this time. Why are you playing for the tie? You want to get to overtime? Well, I don't get it. Try and win the game. Don't give up 25% of your downs because you're scared that you're going to fail. Try to succeed. So I don't have a problem with that. But in terms of the robbery, Stephen A., and yeah, it's the L.A. defense, and it's on the flip side, the Cowboys defense not getting it done. We're talking about the pass interference call. Should it have been called? When I first saw it, I thought, that is ticky-tack. You got to be kidding. They're hand-fighting down the sideline. That's normal stuff. At that moment in the game, you don't call it back. But when they showed the reverse angle, the fact of the matter is the Cowboys lost the game, if you want to blame it on that play, because maybe they just get to overtime, they could lose in overtime. But if you want to blame it on that play, the Cowboys lost that game because a good player made a stupid play. Gallup had him beat. Gallup had maybe the most talented guy in the business beat down the sideline. Who initiated contact? I know it's like ticky-tack stuff, it's normal. But actually, it was Gallup. And at first, Ramsey has his hand on the outside. And it's incidental, they're just running down the sideline. Then Gallup brings his hand to the inside. That's when Ramsey hooked it, because Gallup, who had separation, he had the play, was trying to create more. I don't know, he felt the pressure that Ramsey was putting on him. Once he put his hand there and Ramsey hooked it, Gallup then pushed off to get the separation. So actually, Gallup initiated contact on a play that he had won, it looked like. Ramsey was smart the way he responded to it, disguising it, but also, no, I'm not going to let you put your hand there. And then Gallup pushes off. They actually, I know it's ticky-tack, you don't want to see that decide the game. That may have not decided the game anyway, but they got that call right. If fans are talking about that play as, oh, the Cowboys got robbed, they're wrong.
Well, there's two plays that you're talking about, right? You're talking about the 4th-and-3 that CeeDee Lamb played, but you're also talking about the Michael Gallup play. You basically, if you want to sum it up, they lost the game with two young guys in football. Here's what I'm explaining to you. When you look at the Michael Gallup situation, he's a young guy that doesn't really understand. You don't push off. You do not extend your arms. Had he placed that right arm on the hip of Jalen Ramsey and used it from that standpoint, then you would have never seen the push off. But when you go high to the shoulder pad and you extend the arm, you're going to get that call 100% of the time from a defensive standpoint. Now let's move to the CeeDee Lamb situation. You look at a shallow cross of CeeDee Lamb. It's not that it was a short throw or catch, Stephen A. It's that CeeDee Lamb didn't go deep enough. That's a perfectly called play. It's man-to-man coverage. If he stair-steps the guy at the top, which freezes the defensive back from coming downhill on him, right there, if he freezes him, he's open with no problem at all. I probably would have put Amari Cooper in that situation rather than a young guy like CeeDee Lamb who was picking his way through the defense trying to get a feel for where the linebackers were going to go. That's how they lost the game. I love the 4th-and-3 with 11 minutes to go. You figure your defense is going to stop them. Yeah. You're going to get the football back. Now you have an opportunity to go back down and score again. There was nothing wrong with that call.
Well, first of all, number one, I didn't blame Dak Prescott for that. I wasn't saying that. Hold on, Max. I didn't blame Dak Prescott for that. Mm-hmm. I understand that that's basically a route runner right there, an inexperienced route runner like you just pointed out, Key. But more importantly than that, I don't think we can make the assumption that they were going to stop the Rams. When you consider that the Dallas Cowboys secondary was a huge question mark coming into the season, combined with Leighton Vander Esch getting hurt and them now being compromised at the linebacker position, I understand that for the most part, Dallas is defense played well, but I can't assume anything with that defense.
But I'm giving you what is in the mind of the head coach when he makes that decision on 4th-and-3. He says, okay, here's the best call, Kellen Moore. What do you have for me on 4th-and-3? Kellen Moore says, okay, we can put CeeDee Lamb on a shallow cross. It's going to be man-to-man coverage. It's going to be wide open. And the head coach says, well, if they stop us, they're going to stop us deep in their own territory. And now they're going to have to go 90 yards to score. I'm betting on our defense in that situation. This is why coaches make those calls. I just would have had Amari Cooper run the shallow cross rather than a young guy like CeeDee Lamb.
Right. Key, yeah, but I totally agree with that because Stephen A.,
Mike McCarthy. Go ahead, Max.
What came out of this game is Cowboys fans and even just casual football fans are looking at this game and saying, Key identified it. Here are the two plays that decided the game. If only, then the Cowboys would have won. Both times it was young guys. Both times the idea is like the coach made a bad decision or the refs made a bad decision. And I agree with Key, in neither case, the coach made a good decision, designed a good play, and the refs made the right call. Both times, Key is right. It was young guys failing to execute properly that cost the Cowboys. It's not like bad luck or a bad refs call or a bad coach's decision.
Well, they were the underdogs going into L.A. anyway, right? I mean, they were the underdogs to lose to the Rams.
No, they were actually the most talent. Favored.
Oh, were they favored? Okay, I thought for some reason I thought they were underdogs.
Which was shocking to me. Yep.
But Max, that's the scientific or analytical, boring way you choose to look at it. I choose to look at it differently. These are the Cowboys. What do you mean? What do you mean, in other words? Oh, you know, break it down. No, they find ways to get in their own way. When you look at the Cowboys, what's their record now in close games? 1-7. They have a history, particularly a recent history, of finding ways to blow it. Even when they're favorite, even when they have superior talent, there is something that happens that gets in the way of them winning football games that are tight. Period. So I don't know what you're talking about. You look at it in your analytical, boring way. I'm looking at it from a very realistic perspective. The Cowboys found a way to lose like I knew they would.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
We had two future Hall of Famers, both in the NFC South. Tom Brady, guys, two picks yesterday. One was a pick six, couldn't get it done. And the Saints are victorious. Keyshawn back with us talking about your other former team. Key, we'll get to you in a moment. Max, I'm going to start with you here because I know how much you love Tom Brady. The cliff, the ravine, I don't know what it is, but I'm sure you're happy today. What did this performance say about Tom?
Well, it's a ravine. It looked like a cliff. And then when I got a little closer, it's a ravine. It's just a decline. Look, this says that without Bill Belichick there to give him the team's success that masks his decline, he's obviously in decline. Belichick won after week one. Brady zip. Belichick's winning. That's what this season is about for those two teams in an historical sense. Like when we look back at this, that's what we're going to be really evaluating. Is it Brady or Belichick? It's one of the hottest debates in sports for like 20 years. And now we want to see. Brady went to Tampa, all the weapons, coach, OC, underrated defense, his security blanket and Gronk, who maybe is the third best tight end on the team. Like, who knows? Like, they are deep everywhere on offense. They even picked up some name brand running backs in the offseason. They got everything he wants. And Brady, as he showed last year, when he needed to beat Miami to get a bye in the first week, couldn't do it. Last game of the season, well, he doesn't have weapons. I don't know, Cam did okay without the weapons. Same guys, right? Brady in the playoffs, could he get past the Titans? No. Brady, even the year before when he won the Super Bowl, did it behind, he was an excellent game manager, nothing wrong with that, but it, not elite, behind a great defense, and a running game because he had a great coach. The last time Brady was really on top of the world elite actually is when he lost the Super Bowl with that amazing game he played against the Eagles. Like, that was the last time we saw the Tom Brady we'll remember. This guy is something different. Now, here come the excuses. People won't even be wrong. They didn't have a preseason. He's getting used to a new system. You got to let him get his feet under him. Breeze and them didn't look great either, right? A lot of this looks like preseason. He's 43 years old. Yeah, that's true. But that's what I was saying before this game. Don't come at me with that stuff now. It's true, but everyone was talking about Tom Brady's about to win the MVP. He's still elite, No, he's not, and no, he's not. Bruce Arians, by the way, calls him out, which I think is good for the team, saying those two interceptions were on Brady. He was right. And if this was last year and Jameis did that, we'd all be rolling our eyes, right? The only difference is Jameis would have a whole lot of yards and maybe some more touchdowns to go with the two costly interceptions. It is what it is. This is what a 43-year-old quarterback on a new team looks like.
Well, first of all, Keyshawn has that look on his face, and I'm looking at you the way that I do, number one, because we don't understand what the hell you're saying, and number two, we don't care. And the reason why we don't care, Max Kellerman, is because you were talking about the cliff and then the ravine, and it took you 3 years to get from the cliff to the ravine, and in the meantime, Brady went to 3 Super Bowls and won 2. So we don't want to hear what the hell you have to say about Brady and the ravine. We stopped listening to you about Brady in 2016. We just tolerate you because you're on national television, and obviously we care about what you have to say with every other subject. But when it comes to Tom Brady, your credibility was shot 4 years ago. That's number one. Number two, it's game one of a new team, new system. Now, I will throw a mea culpa out there. I thought that even though there was no preseason, because of his experience along with the talent, that it would work to their advantage because nobody else had preseason to go with it, to work off of as well. I was wrong about that because the reality is that clearly him and his receivers weren't on the same page, and I don't think him and Bruce Arians was on the same page. You can't ask Tom Brady to stand in a pocket or veer left, right, and throw it wide right all the way over there and don't expect an interception. That was the pick six by Janoris Jenkins. Okay, by the way, New Orleans is one of the most well-balanced team in the game. I predicted they would win this game, and with having Malcolm Jenkins and Janoris Jenkins added to that defense, with Marshawn Lattimore still out there in that secondary and what have you, obviously they're gonna have an upside to them over most teams. So Tom Brady got exposed in that regard yesterday. Tampa Bay clearly has some work to do. That means Bruce Arians. That means obviously Byron Leftwich. That means Tom Brady. That means his chemistry with the receivers, whether it's OJ Howard, whether it's Mike Evans, whether it's Chris Godwin and the boys. Gronkowski looked a bit old, but that might have just been one game. He might look better in the weeks to come. It remains to be seen. We're talking about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers going against one of the elite teams in the National Football League in game one without a preseason. That's part of the reason we all predicted they would lose this game. I'm not panicking by any stretch of the imagination. It's one game. We certainly shouldn't anticipate that Tom Brady, who, by the way, has had pick sixes in three in his last three games, by the way, we can't assume that that's something that's going to continue with this dude based on his cerebral approach to the game alone. I think this is an aberration. I think he'll be just fine the more he could develop chemistry with his team, and we'll see what happens going forward.
Max, I love you, man, but you way off base on Tom Brady. I think when you look at it, and I know you said people are going to say these things, but the facts are the facts. The truth is the truth. He did not have a real training camp. Yes, he tried to put things together in the summer workouts. It's not the same. Even in training camp, guys are T-shirt All-Americans in practice. They stop on routes. They screw things up. They're in the wrong position. When the real bullets go to flying like they did yesterday in the game, things are totally different across the board. When you look at Tom Brady, you look at the interception, the Mike Evans interception. Those two were not on the same page. Mike Evans is looking to run a dig route. He stops thinking his zone instead of going into the second window. Brady then gets ready to, once he releases the ball, he looks and says, oh my God, now it sails on him. Then you look at the other throw on the interceptions on the Jenkins pick six. Brady is throwing from the left hash all the way across the field to the right, something that he did not do in New England. So it's something he's getting used to doing certain things a different way. You can't possibly think that it's the end of Tom Brady. Once they get on the same page and in sync, you're going to see a totally different Tampa Bay Buccaneer team. Leonard Fournette just got there, what, 2 weeks ago? Like, you got to give it time to gel. I know you want to, you know, jump on it and be the first one to say, oh, Brady's old, Brady's this, Brady's that. No, they're going to be around. Now, whether or not they win the division or whether or not they make a strong run in the playoffs, they're certainly going to be hanging around to the end of the season.
T, I agree. Listen, when I first made the prediction, I said he's going to be a bum in short order. I apologized the next day because I don't want to call Tom Brady a bum, and that's not exactly what I thought. And I corrected it and explained what I meant. I meant just a guy. He goes from being, oh my God, the greatest ever, to just a guy. That's what happens when quarterbacks pass 40 usually. Until
You might be right, but I can guarantee you it's a handful of teams in the National Football League right now. They want that just a guy.
Yep.
They'll take that just a guy in a heartbeat.
But this is, no,
surrounded
no doubt.
Around
but
great
this
talent.
Is what I'm saying. This is what I'm saying. Think of how perfect it has to be. It used to be Brady could make lemonade out of lemons, right?
No,
you know, he didn't
no,
need great
not,
receivers. He
not.
Made guys great. Now all of a sudden, we're talking about last year their excuses. They didn't have weapons. Now this year they have weapons, but they don't, there's no continuity. So
it's
what does Brady need?
Game.
Brady needs this talent under Belichick? Of
Dude,
course, anyone could do well with that.
It's one game. If you go back to the last time they won the Super Bowl, how did they start out? There was games that he didn't play well, and they still went and won the Super Bowl. You cannot take one game. You cannot take one game and say, oh, my God, Tom Brady, look at the talent Keyshawn. Around him. This is going to be a non-playoff type team. You can't do that.
No, I don't. I think they're going to be competitive
Keyshawn,
for a playoff spot this year.
Hey,
what you say there, Stephen A?
Hold on, Max. Keyshawn, let me ask you a question, and I need a quick answer from you here. When Tom Brady went to the three Super Bowls and lost one, when he threw for 500 yards against the Philadelphia Eagles, that was the lone Super Bowl he lost.
That's good.
But he won the other two Super Bowls, Atlanta and against the Los Angeles Rams. Was he just another guy at that particular moment in time, yes or no?
No. Absolutely not.
That's when Max was saying he's just another guy. And so that's my point to
no,
people that
true,
try to
Stephen
talk
a.
with
no,
Max.
No, 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 be
want,
real
hold
now.
Hold on, Max. Hold,
that's
hold,
not
hold it. Hold it. Hold it. Hold it. You'll get your chance.
Not
I'm
true.
Coming to you. Max Kellerman, in 2016, you said, and by the way, I never bring up the fact that you said he was a bum because you did apologize immediately. And I don't think that should be held against you because you apologized immediately. So I never bring it up. You remind the audience you said that. I don't do that. But the point is that you
afraid.
Said at that particular moment in time when you said the cliff, you were trying to say he's just another guy. And you just explained to Keyshawn he was just another guy. I'm saying in the aftermath of that was when he went to the three Super Bowls. So
right,
you've
Stephen
been wrong
a.
for four
Let's
years.
Let's talk about that for a second. Hold on. We can go get tape of what I said. That's fine. We have it. I said 18 months because I figured by the end of not that season, but two seasons from then, it would happen by then. He defied it by a full year. But I'm here to tell you, and I give him credit, losing the Super Bowl to the Eagles, he was still clearly among the all-time greats and among the best in the game. They didn't punt. I mean, like, he was great in that game.
Keyshawn, Max
the
is
following
right.
season,
Max
Belichick
is right.
saw the regression
Max right.
and built the
Max
team
is right
over
on what?
Defense
no, no.
and running.
Hold on, Max. He
right
did
on
say
what?
18 months. He did say in 2016, he did say within 18 months. So, in other words, he wasn't wrong the last 4 years. He was wrong the last two. My bad. And because I'm giving him 18 months.
Real quick,
so now he admitted that, oh, no, I was wrong. I was off a year. No, you was actually off 2 years. But that's okay.
Well, I'm saying he was another guy last year.
Hey, Max, think about it, though. Tom Brady, greatness for 20 years in New England. He had one dominant outside receiver, and that was Randy Moss. Outside of that, everything is the tied in. In the slot or the backs. Now he's got two dominant outside receivers. He's got to get used to those things. And I think you just need to slow down a little bit, big fella. Just slow down a little bit.
Key, I'm with you. I think he'll get better over the season than he was week one. What I'm saying is, and Bruce Arians is an excellent coach, and he has an OC, has everything he needs. What I'm saying is this season's really about, when we look back at this, hey, was it Belichick or Brady? And I know Brady's old and all that, but you got everything you could want on this team. Belichick's 1-0. Same old Patriots.
All right.
1-0. And
it's
if Brady was
cliff.
On the Patriots, he'd be 1-0
it's
right
It's a ravine.
Now.
It's
it
not
was a Miami Dolphins. Calm down.
It's just another guy.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. That bad man didn't skip a beat. Threw four TDs in a road win over the Vikings. It could have been even better if not for a drop TD by Marquez Valdez-Scantling, and it looks like Jordan Love could be waiting a while before he takes the reins from Rodgers. On that note, we bring in our quarterback, Dan Orlovsky. Dan, always good to see you. You can see him 4 p.m. Eastern every day on the new look NFL Live. Stephen A., what did the Packers and Rodgers prove yesterday?
Well, they didn't prove much because they were going against a rookie cornerback in Dantzler, I believe that's his name, for Minnesota. Now that you got a couple of the more experienced guys that are no longer there, including Xavier Rhodes and others, the fact is you're Minnesota, you're relying on rookie corners, and Aaron Rodgers exploited them, no question about it. But it doesn't take away from the fact he's a bad man. Like I said on many, many occasions, 364 yards passing. What were the numbers, 32 or 44? Absolutely sensational. With some of the dimes that he threw, it was something special to behold. Valdez-Scantling dropped a couple of passes, including a touchdown pass. It would have been even better numbers than what we saw. But in the end, Aaron Rodgers making throws that pretty much only he and maybe Patrick Mahomes can make. Just reminding everybody of how elite he is, how special he is, and how much he still has left in his arsenal. Some of those intermediate throws last year, remember, he struggled with that. I think he ranked like 25th in the NFL in terms of those intermediate throws. Didn't try to do much of that yesterday. Seemed relatively pedestrian for most of the first quarter, but then got it going. In the end, this brother can fling the football with the best of them. He is absolutely still elite. I think Matt LaFleur let him loose a little bit come end of the first quarter throughout the rest of the game, and he just threw a few dime pieces as well. Him to Davante Adams, him to Valdez-Scantling. The list just goes on and on. He has that kind of thing. But to me, it also said to me how inexcusable, or reminded me how inexcusable it was for the Green Bay Packers not to draft a wide receiver or a tight end or to put themselves in a position in the first round to buffer their offensive talent. Because when you're 13-3 last year in the NFC Championship game with Aaron Rodgers still as your quarterback, with just a tweak here or there potentially enabling you to capture a Super Bowl, for your focus to be drafting a successor to Aaron Rodgers was the ultimate insult. And I think he's on a mission to show the organization just that, not the players, because he has no issue with the players. It's the organization as a whole. He's on a mission to show them what the hell they're doing is wrong. And I think he took a strong step in that direction yesterday about reminding us about what we can do. Minnesota helped with Kirk Cousins, I mean, just attempting 16 passes for the first three quarters of the game, for crying out loud. It was like, I don't know what the hell they were doing in terms of just running the football and not allowing him to do anything. But in the end, still in all, it doesn't take away from what Aaron Rodgers did when he had the ball in his hands. It was special. I think it was the best performance of the day by a quarterback, and that's saying a lot considering how Russell Wilson looked yesterday.
Look, I knew that Aaron Rodgers was going to win this game, and I thought it would be by at least a score plus, because with national attention on him, they took a quarterback in the first round. He's playing Kirk Cousins in the Vikings, and Kirk got the monkey off his back a little bit last year. I get it. But no, in a game like this, Aaron Rodgers with a chance over Kirk Cousins with his crew all day, every time under these circumstances, I was unsurprised. Look, Aaron Rodgers showed you why, you know, I and others still, not a lot of us anymore, but still consider him the second best player in football behind Mahomes. The difference being Mahomes is in his prime and Rodgers looks a little past his, and maybe Mahomes is even a little bit more talented, which is tough to be because Rodgers is like as good as it gets just about. Look, for those like, how could you put Aaron Rodgers ahead of Russell Wilson? That's why, because Aaron Rodgers can do some things that no one other than Mahomes really can do with the football. He's just a special kind of talent. But I'm going to play devil's advocate a little bit here, Stephen A. And do I think they should have taken a receiver in the first round? Aaron Rodgers has thrown fewer passes, I believe, for a quarterback this deep into his career to first round picks than anyone. Right, ever. He never has anyone. Devontae Adams and who else right now in terms of talent? So could he use a guy on the other side who's an elite type of young player? Yeah, he could have. But what about this? Last year they win 13 games, but Rodgers is more of a game manager now in a new system. But he's just learning the system. By the way, he had a playoff win against Russell Wilson last season. This year, now he's going to have the handcuffs off a little bit because he gets it a little bit more, right? But also, they drafted a quarterback in the first round. Think about what that means to a guy like Aaron Rodgers. And unlike Brett Favre, who iced Rodgers, we've seen clips on social media from the offseason of Rodgers like giving Jordan Love advice, right? He's going to maybe learn from some of his own experience, the way he wished Favre would have treated him, I'm sure, and try to help Jordan Love in certain ways. But Rodgers tried. As I think before Mahomes came around, the best who ever did it. Not the greatest, not the most accomplished, the best. You draft a quarterback, you draft my replacement in the first round instead of getting me help. What they have right now is Aaron Rodgers, who's accustomed to his new system and who is motivated. I don't care how internally motivated you are. They draft a quarterback in the first round, it's going to take it to the next level. I think Rodgers behind Mahomes right now is the best player in the game.
All right, so what did the Packers and Rodgers prove? One, if this is the version of Rodgers that we're going to get, that they're a problem for the NFL. Not for just the NFC. They are a problem this season for the NFL. And then two, how important player development is. I go back to the throw that he makes to Devontae Adams right before the half on the move, and he throws that absolute howitzer. And then the very next, they get the quick turnover, and he throws the bomb to Valdes-Scantling. And all of a sudden, it's like, wait, that happened so quickly. Because in the first quarter, they were very stagnant. They weren't getting any kind of separation. And then Aaron almost kind of like gave them a jolt with the throw to Devontae Adams. And then it just came bombs away. But it was Valdes-Scantling who was hurt a little bit last year. Player development. Alan Lazard kind of came on the scene a little bit last year. He made some plays. Player development. And so here's the thing. If this is the Aaron Rodgers who's having fun again and who's having joy again and he's confident, then this is a problem for the NFL, because I said this so many times last year. This offense, every single game, was 3 or 4 plays away from being dominant. They were 4 yards. It was just a throw that just missed. The receiver slowed down just a little bit. They didn't have that from the second quarter on yesterday. And if that's what we're going to get, this will be one of the best offenses in the NFL, no matter if they drafted a receiver this year or not, because when Aaron is at his best, and I remember playing Aaron when he was young. I grew up in the same division as him. I was on the sideline saying, nice throw, and he was on the field. But when I watched him be at his absolute best, it was like watching a kid on a playground full of joy. And he just knew when he walked on the field, like Stephen A. says, I'm the baddest dude on the field. And that's when he's his most dangerous. And so I think that they showed us yesterday that they've got the ability and the capability of being a big-time problem this season. And I know Minnesota doesn't have young corners, and I know Danielle Hunter wasn't playing, but Rodgers didn't even make good throws yesterday. He made throws that were in perfect stride consistently.
Well, this is the part I think you're missing, Dan. Nobody's questioning what a threat they're going to be in terms of them being pulled. Like, for example, we had a discussion last week and talk about Super Bowl contention, and I said no because I didn't have them in my top three per se. I didn't mean it in a literal sense. I understand that they're going to make the playoffs. I believe they're going to make the playoffs, and obviously that gives you a chance. But when I think about the top three teams in the NFL, I don't view Green Bay as being one of them. But here's the thing about Aaron Rodgers. When you talk about Aaron Rodgers the way that you just did, Dan, here's what I want you to understand. We're not talking about Green Bay being a threat. We're not talking about them being talented. What we're saying is you were there last year, and all you had to do was tweak something to support your quarterback as opposed to potentially compromise him. And they chose the latter. And so when I look at whether it's Lazard, it's Devontae Adams, who can ball, whether it's Valdes-Scantling, two drop passes notwithstanding, the brothers still can play. The Aaron Jones of the world, people like that. We know they have enough to be formidable and to be a threat. But the point is, in the end, you're still relatively the same team that you were yesterday because you chose to be, because you prioritize looking ahead in the future, a successor for Aaron Rodgers, as opposed to saying, damn, we got a brother here that is just elite. Let's ride his coattails for as long as we possibly can on this gravy train,
sure,
and let him take us to the promised land. You didn't commit to doing that. And that in and of itself may have compromised the success you're hoping to have.
The only thing I would follow up with that with Stephen A is I don't think they're the same team as last year, because this is a second year in an offense. And this is a quarterback who said he went back and looked at some of the things from his past. And I talk about player development, and that's a big thing in the NFL. I say it's week one. I'd say this, though. I went into week one thinking the San Francisco 49ers were one of the three elite teams in the NFC, and Green Bay was not. And I don't feel the same way today. I think the Packers are a better team than San Francisco today.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
I got to clean up the interceptions. I put our defense in a bad spot on a couple occasions. And, you know, it was just we've definitely lost some momentum. And, you know, we didn't make the plays we needed to make. And I got to be better. It starts with me. I got to protect the ball, lead these guys better, and I'll own that.
The Eagles blew a 17-point blown lead, and the Washington football team gets the victory. Not the best game for Philly's leading man, Carson Wentz, sacked 8 times by that Washington pass rush. Dan back here with us, who's had some epic battles with Max about Carson. Max, I'll start with you. What did this game say to you about Wentz?
Let me just say it like this. Dan Orlovsky, welcome. I've been waiting for you. I read your Twitter yesterday. I don't understand this. Dan Orlovsky breaks down tape, I think, better than anyone since John Gruden had his own show, right? I love the way you do it, Dan. You make stuff accessible to people like me, to everyone. And yet you have this blind spot for, or you have had a blind spot for Carson Wentz, because this was our basic argument the last couple years. And by the way, I was where you were a couple years ago. In 2017, I thought he was the MVP of the league when he got hurt. Molly used to argue it was Brady. I was saying, no, this Wentz, he can do things that a couple of guys can do. Like we talked about Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers. He has just about, maybe not quite, almost that kind of talent. So I get it. And that's the full Carson Wentz experience. You see this elite, like no ceiling kind of talent. Oh my God, he's amazing. Coupled with baffling decision making and messing up kind of routine plays, especially at critical moments. So like take last year, for example. Okay, he didn't have the, like his receivers were dropping a lot of balls. We know that. But he had two elite tight ends. He had an elite offensive line. He had an emerging star in Miles Sanders. He was in the worst division of all time. And he got healthy in terms of the numbers and the wins against the worst division ever. And every quarterback he played was either a replacement or a rookie. And everyone else in the division, which wasn't strong, did better against those teams than Wentz did. Like, I was not impressed last year, to tell you the truth. And why? Because of what we just saw yesterday. Early on, I'm like, okay, fine. It's year 5. This guy's finally playing up to the contract. He looks amazing. And then the decision-making starts, right? You're up 3 scores. You're heading into the half. You can't turn the ball over. You can't. You, like, just don't turn the ball over. And then later in the game, he makes baffling decisions. Especially, by the way, if you've led the league in turnovers, in fumbles, like over a time, like just don't do that. Like, that's gotta be on your mind. It's the decision making and also the execution of pedestrian plays. It was the same thing last year. He'd follow an oh my God highlight reel play with a couple of like, what? He couldn't execute that pedestrian play? What? He turned the ball over then? Like fourth quarter, third down, close games. They got lucky at the end. And by the way, he showed great spirit but he was also lucky. One lucky yesterday. No, he wasn't. And by the way, these kind of mistakes he make, you can live with it on a rookie deal. This is why I thought when they, like, I talk about that contract, really? You want him to overcome whatever problems there are on the team? He's being paid that way. Can he? If it's a rookie deal and you have financial flexibility, fine, I get it. You'll take the good with the bad. He's in his fifth season. He's paid as a franchise quarterback. And he gives the game away. The Washington team was dead in the water. They did not have a pulse. He gave it to them with his decision-making, with his inability to execute simple stuff. This is year five, Dan. He is not, as I said last year, he was not good last year. He has picked up where he left off. This is not, and I don't say this because I'm down on his talent. I'm very high on his talent. This is not acceptable.
Go ahead, Dan.
Stephen A. Mayor, you. All right. Listen, I'm not going to get into a ton last year. We know that you and I see last year very differently. You can't sit here and say that he's notorious for bad decision-making with the football as well either, because he's the first quarterback in the history of the NFL to have three straight seasons, 20-plus touchdowns, seven or less interceptions. That is indicative of being really good with the football. Let's go to yesterday. Carson Wentz is the reason they lost that football game yesterday, okay? I am not going to overreact. It is week one, but I was really disappointed in watching how he played and just the style of football yesterday, because last year he did such a good job of playing quarterback, understanding what was around him and what was necessary to win that football game. And yesterday was such a regression that it made me angry, to be honest with you. It made me frustrated to watch, because when you go into that game, and I tweeted this out at like 11:30 yesterday morning when Lane Johnson was said to be inactive, the number one job that he had yesterday was to make sure that Washington's defensive line did not win the football game. Then you go up 17 donuts. You're playing really well. In that moment, the only way Washington wins that game is you give them the ball, or you let that defensive line get hot. And he did both of those. And Carson Wentz is too good of a player. He's too mature. He's too experienced. He walked this road last year to make those mistakes, to give Washington energy, to give them juice. And the play that frustrated me the most, and I put this on Twitter, was the second quarter sack when it's second and 20 and they run a screen pass and it's not there, and he decides to like try to make something and he runs in back into the line of scrimmage and gets hurt, or almost gets hurt. It's the same play that he got hurt on in the playoffs last year. And so I'm not going to overreact. This is week one. That being said, if he does not fix this today and moving forward into next week and he continues to hurt himself and the team, Doug Peterson's got to go, Carson, the next time this happens, you got to come off the field, because I've got to know that you have definitively made this jump, because the only reason Washington won yesterday was Carson gave them the game. And that's a lot for me to say. I still think he's a phenomenal player. I'll take him over a bunch of quarterbacks in the NFL. I'm excited to watch him week two. But yesterday he failed himself and his team by selfish play.
Well, first of all, there's no arguing about how awful Carson Wentz looked yesterday. He looked absolutely awful. He was taking unnecessary chances. His interceptions were inexcusable. There's no question that he shouldn't have thrown the passes that he has thrown, taking the chances that he has taken. He's notorious for holding on to the football entirely too long. That had something to do with the 8 sacks. But I would ask y'all to pump the brakes and both of y'all just calm your nerves just a touch, okay? Number one, look at their right tackle. Look at their right guard. Look at their left tackle.
You've
got
care.
Injuries all over the place. People who are hampered all over the place. You don't care, but I do, and I'm the one talking. So listen to this. Here's the reality of the situation. You had a questionable and highly suspect offensive line. They had 8 sacks. You could blame about 3 or 4 on Carson Wentz for holding on to the football. But again, y'all are shaking your head. I'm telling you, there's no excuse for yesterday. But let's not act like yesterday is always the case. Last year, Max, we're sitting there and we're acting like, DeSean Jackson and Alshon Jeffrey and Nelson Aguilar at the time played all 16 games along with Goddard and Zach Ertz, and he had all of his targets necessary to him. The offensive line was compromised yesterday. Their receivers missed at least 5 games. DeSean Jackson actually ended up only playing three games the entire season. He got hurt the very second game of the season, so his deep threat was gone. We heard about Miles Sanders and Boston Scott and guys like that for the first time. We saw guys coming off the practice squad. We saw at least three or four games lost because of drop passes. Like J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, okay? You got Greg Ward out there. You got a bunch of inexperienced dudes, or dudes just are not considered to be that elite. I look at Carson Wentz yesterday, and I understand how awful he was. It was an awful performance on his part for one game. But I'm not going off of last year and saying last year he was god-awful. I'm looking at what he was working with last year. And if he didn't take some of the chances that he took and didn't do some of the things he did last year, they wouldn't have made the playoffs.
Stephen A., no one has it perfect. Last year he had an elite offensive line, elite tight ends, and who cares if you've heard of Miles Sanders or not? He was an emerging star. Now this, like yesterday, it's a makeshift line. I get it. The receiving core is better. It's not perfect. The fact of the matter is, with 6:29 in the third quarter at the Washington 22, he took a 13-yard sack. He does these things that are maddening, and that's why Howie Roseman, who I think saw what I saw last year, drafted a quarterback in the second round, drafted Jalen Hurts instead of packaging the pick to move up to get the best receiver in the draft. Because they are looking at his possible replacement. And it's not just the injury concerns, guys. This is what it is. By the way, it is also, I have heard from a source that I trust, that one of Carson Wentz's issues, remember Stephen A., when everyone was talking about how Doug Peterson makes things simpler for Nick Foles, but it was too complicated for Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz calls a lot of his plays and changes a lot of plays. He has a lot of power on that team. And Dan, I think for a guy who has that decision-making ability, he probably shouldn't.
No, I totally disagree with that. Like he's one of, and I know people who worked very intimately with him. They rave about his intelligence. Now, they've talked about sometimes he gets to the line of scrimmage and changes it when it's not necessarily needed because he's trying to hit the home run, and he tried to win the game every single play yesterday. Stephen A., you bring up fair points of the talent around him. I get all that. But you were playing the Washington football team. If this was they were playing the Saints or the Bucks, and yesterday happened, I would probably be sitting here going, guys, they were so decimated. But you get paid a lot of money, and you're good enough to know that when you get that 17-0 lead, you control who wins that football game as a quarterback. As long as you don't turn it over, and as long as you don't take those silly sacks, your team would win the game, because the only way Washington could score is if you give them some stuff, if you give them short fields. He hurt the football team. That's the bottom line. Do I think he's going to bounce back and be huge? 100%. But he's got to do it.
Dan Orlovsky, part of learning how to win an argument is actually listening to the argument being made against yours, okay? I never disputed anything about yesterday. My point was about what Max brought up last year, about last year's team. And if I recall correctly, Dan Orlovsky, you and I were on the same side in that regard. We talked about him being bereft of the talent necessary last season. So what I was talking about with Carson Wentz now, there is no excuse for yesterday's performance. It was awful, and he lost the game for them as far as I'm concerned. What I was saying was Max can't use last year, piggyback off of last year to say, what we saw yesterday was a continuation of last year.
That's
because
fair.
I don't think it was. I think last year was a different situation.
But wait a minute.
That's fair.
It was a different situation, but wait a minute. You're not going to admit, you guys aren't going to acknowledge, what was the real disagreement I was saying? No one disputes Carson Wentz's talent. I'm as high on his talent as anyone, I think. I was talking about decision-making and execution of pedestrian plays.
That's exactly what he did last year.
I thought I saw something. I thought I saw something I didn't
exactly
see. And then in week one, we see the same thing.
Max, that's exactly what he did last year, was execute the pedestrian plays. And that's what watching yesterday was makes it so maddening, was he didn't allow the execution of the pedestrian play. He tried to do too much every single play. That's why last year was so different than yesterday.
Okay.
I see. So what I thought I saw then came true yesterday out of the blue.
Max, it's week one.
Molly, Max, and Dan. So we all going to just sit up here and we going to point the finger at Carson Wentz. but we don't bring in Doug Peterson at all, who allows him the power to audible as much as he does, who sits up there and confers with them to run plays and what have you, who's the damn head coach. We don't bring up the fact that he's allowed him to go out there and play loosey-goosey and make those mistakes?